We're gonna do a little song for you at this time. It's called Blues from the Lowland. Blues from the low, low land.
Singout was founded over 70 years ago by a group of folks who love roots music. Today it's a vital and entertaining online resource for anyone who loves folk music the world over. As in the past, thousands of people turn to Singout to read about and learn from the artists who play the music. This is the Singout Radio Magazine.
Played a long time, man.
This is the Singout Radio Magazine, and I'm your host, Tom Druckenmiller. Our theme music this week comes from two different recordings. We just heard Sonny Terry and Brownie McGhee, and Blues for the Lowlands. from Giants of the Blues on Legacy International Recordings. This past Sunday, May 22nd, an exhibit called Woody Guthrie, People Are the Song, closed at the Morgan Library and Museum in Manhattan. Since last week we noted the opening of the Bob Dylan Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma, I thought it fitting that we talk about and listen to some music from Woody Guthrie. His museum is also in Tulsa, and whose center was one of the sponsors of the Morgan exhibit. Just a brief biography of Woody. He was born in 1912 and wrote 3,000 songs, including This Land Is Your Land, Pastures of Plenty, Union Made, Deportee, and many more. Also including drawings, prose, and poetry. Songs that people will sing as long as groups gather to sing. Woody died in 1967 of Huntington's chorea, a genetic condition that usually emerges between the age of 30 and 50. The disease causes changes to your physical and mental health and becomes worse over time. This week, we'll hear lots of renditions of Woody's songs, as well as an introduction to a concert recorded in 1949 featuring Woody and his wife Marjorie and recorded on a wire recording system. We'll open with Pete from the recording Pete Remembers Woody about the day the two met. We'll follow with California Blues recorded by Woody and then some more memories of Woody from Pete. Songs and Remembrances of Woody Guthrie this week on the Sing Out Radio magazine. Now here's Pete Seeger.
This is Pete Seeger telling you what I know of Woody Guthrie. Woody Guthrie hitchhiked into New York from Pennsylvania in the month of February because Will Geer, the well-known actor, had arranged for a midnight benefit concert in a small theater off Broadway, and it would benefit the California migratory workers. They called them Okies, and some of them were called Texies or Kansies or Arkies. And Will had written Woody, if you can get here by March, some people will hear you and you'll get some jobs. Well, I was working in Washington, D.C. at the time with Alan Lomax, the folklorist, and he drove me up in his car. He insisted that I sing at least one song in the program. I did, very amateurishly, and got a smattering of polite applause. But there were some famous people on the show: Leadbelly, Josh White, the Golden Gate Quartet, Burl Ives, and a square dance by Margot Mayo's American Square Dance Group, and my future wife was one of the dancers. And there was this short, curly-headed guy named Woody telling stories and jokes and singing a few songs for about 20 minutes. He held that audience absolutely spellbound. Here was the real thing. And Alan Lomax got backstage and says, Woody, I've got a recording studio down in Washington. You have to come down and record all these songs and more. All the songs you know, all the songs you've made up. And he stayed down there for 3 days. They recorded Rambling On. And in Alan's house, I met Woody, and he found that I could follow him in any song he played. I had a good ear, and I stayed in tune, played the right chord, didn't play anything too fancy. So pretty soon I was tagging along with him.
I'm going to California, where they sleep out every night. I'm going to California, where they sleep out every night. 'Cause the women in Oklahoma just nicely ain't treating me right. I'd rather drink muddy water, sleep in a hollow log. I'd rather drink muddy water and sleep in a hollow log than to be in Texas treated like a doggone dog. Notice how this song hits all of those southern states and welcomes them all to come to California. California waters taste like cherry wine. California waters taste like cherry wine. But the Georgia waters taste like turpentine.
I found a piece of paper among Woody's many pieces of paper, and at the top of the page it says, God Blessed America. I found that when he was hitchhiking through Pennsylvania, he'd have to go in for a cup of coffee occasionally, a nickel cup of coffee it was in those days. And God Bless America was a big hit at the time, and it was on the jukebox. So that was the last line of every verse. This land is your land, so on. God blessed America for me. As I went walking that ribbon of highway, God blessed America for me. I roamed in a ramble, followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. God blessed America for me. Was a great high wall there that tried to stop me. A sign was painted that said, private property. Isn't that great to rhyme stop me with property? But on the backside, it didn't say nothing. God blessed America for me. When the sun came shining, then I was strolling, the wheat fields waving, the dust clouds rolling. The voice was chanting as the fog was lifting. God blessed America for me. One bright sunny morning, by the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office, I saw my people. As they stood there hungry, I stood there wondering if God blessed America for me. That's how he wrote the song in 1940. We never heard him sing it once. But somewhere in the next 8 years, he added a few verses and he got a new last line. This land was made for you and me. And there was a tiny, tiny little recording company called Folkways. And in 1948, the man in charge of the company, his name was Moses Ash, he said, Woody, you're going to get 2.5 minutes of a song on one side of a record. We have to cut a few verses. And maybe that's why some of those verses didn't get in the recording. However, it was still a good song, and up in New York, there was a visitor who worked for a big, huge publishing company that published millions and millions of books for schools. And he said, I think I'll put this in that book. And kids loved it, and they would sing it, and then they'd go home and they'd sing it. 20 years later, everybody in this country knew the song, and it had never been played on the radio, never sold in a single music store. It literally would have been unknown if it hadn't been for those kids. Kids made the song famous.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway, saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me, a voice was sounding. This land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling. The voice was chanting as the fog was lifting. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, the dust clouds rolling, the voice coming chanting, and the fog was lifting. This land was made for you and me.
Being a lifelong Pennsylvanian, I've always been proud of the fact that Woody wrote This Land Is Your Land while hitchhiking through Pennsylvania. And that was Woody from a collection called Folkways, The Original Vision on Smithsonian Folkways Records. And before that, we heard from Pete as he remembers Woody writing This Land Is Your Land. That's from the recording Pete Remembers Woody, Pete Seeger, on Appleseed Records. And before that, we heard Woody from the 100th Anniversary Collection on Not Now Records, and we heard California Blues. And we let off that set with Pete once again talking about the time he met Woody Guthrie from Pete Remembers Woody on Appleseed Records. In 2001, the Woody Guthrie Archives received two spools of wire recordings from a live Woody Guthrie performance held in Newark, New Jersey in 1949. It's amazing to hear him interact and talk and play his music. It was issued on Rounder Records on behalf of the Woody Guthrie Foundation. We're going to listen to something really interesting. This is Woody and his wife Marjorie having a little conversation, and he's being introduced for his part of the playing on this recording. Here's the Live Wire Woody Guthrie in Performance 1949, Woody and Marjorie on the Sing Out Radio Magazine.
I've come to know a little more about folk songs only through Woody. And when Miss Bach asked me to come as commentator tonight, I thought I could only really comment from one folk singer's point of view, but I think Woody does represent, in a way, what many folk singers are and have been from the earliest times. I think that you'll agree with me that one of the first signs of communication in our lives, even as infants, is through sound. We cry when we want something. We have different kinds of ways of crying. And as time has, as we grow older, we learn to communicate through another kind of speech. But the tone of our voice and the quality of our voice is the meaning. And I think if we can think back even further than before the time we were actually born ourselves, way back to the old troubadours, we also come to learn then that folk singing really was not only a communication between one or two people. It became a communication between two families, and soon between two cities, and soon between two worlds. And it's nice to think, if you can, that a voice can be heard today that can communicate to you one thing, and 25 years from now will still mean something to somebody else about our time. And I think that's one big wonderful part about being with Woody, because I know that I can tell you that he reads every paper practically that's printed on the market. We get everything from the Pacific Citizen, all about the Japanese and Nisei people in Salt Lake City, to the Worker and to the New York Times and to all the New York papers that are available for anyone to read. In my home is one big collection of clippings. They hang all over the walls. If anyone walked into my house, you would think it were a scrapbook. It is. But I think it's a very wonderful one. And many times I do miss things in you that Woody has stuck up on the wall. And the next thing I know, he's begun to write about them. And he writes anywhere from 1 to 10 songs a day, to say nothing of the novels and short stories and poems that seem to flow so easily from him. Well, I've given you a little background of our meeting so that you'll know something about what I can only say about him. And I'm going to ask Woody to talk too before he sings. I'm going to ask him some questions, and I want you to sort of tell us, Woody, because I feel it's so important for people to understand what these songs are. First, I think you ought to tell us something about your life as a kid. I think that you lived such a different life from anybody else perhaps in this room that I think it would be interesting to know the little bit of the background of your life so they'll understand why you wrote the songs that you did at special times. You want to tell us about Oklahoma? That's a favorite subject, and I'm going to time you.
How much? How long?
Oh, a few sentences.
Well, I was born and raised in the state of Oklahoma, called the land of the five civilized Indian tribes, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Cherokee, Creek, and Seminole. At the time that I was born, the year 1912, my father was a sort of a hard, fist-fighting Woodrow Wilson Democrat. So Woodrow Wilson was nominated that same year. At the age of about 4 or 5 years old, a long time before I went to school, I remember my dad used to teach me little political speeches and rhymes, and I'd climb up in a hay wagon around all of the political meetings and rallies they had on the streets, and I'd make my little speeches. And it might be that I've turned out now that where I don't believe the speeches anymore and make speeches just the opposite. But anyway, that was a pretty early age to be standing up in a hay wagon. I remember barefooted several years before I ever thought of going to school. I must have been 4, 5, 6 years old, along there somewhere. But when I first started remembering anything about the town, I remember that my life had been a sort of a typical cowboy town. I had a horse, I had 2 or 3 horses. We had several bird dogs and several prize hogs and several prize cattle, several prize horses. My life was more or less wrapped up in all that, just like any other kids. But something started happening to the town, and it happened so fast and so quick that all of that cowboy angle of my life sort of faded out. I mean, the fact that the Indians and the poor Negroes had been given the state of Oklahoma by sort of United States treaties of all kinds because they didn't figure that the land was good enough for anything else. But the very minute that everybody found out that there was millions and millions of dollars worth of oil pools under every acre of land almost in Oklahoma, the Indians and the poor Negroes that did own the land naturally had to be cheated out of it and fast. A lot of ways was work to get them loose from the land. There used to be a state law in Oklahoma that a white man could not marry a Negro nor an Indian. It was okay for an Indian to marry a Negro, it was okay for a Negro to marry an Indian. The white man could not marry either one according to the state law. Then after the oil come in and the Negro and the Indians got so rich, why then they passed a new state law that a Negro could not marry a white man nor an Indian, but a white man could marry an Indian, but a white man could not marry a Negro because the poor Negroes did not have any state lands. Other tricks they used was they passed the prohibition law in 1913. We still got prohibition in the state. You might say Oklahoma is first and everything worst. The Indians and Negroes down in there cannot walk into a store like you can here and buy a bottle of whiskey to take up your home and drink that's got a stamp on it that guarantees that the United States that it's a little bit sanitary. Every bottle of liquor that you buy, whether you know it or not, some sanitation man up and down the line is gone through the motions of at least examining. There are several brands of liquor on the market. If you don't know what to buy, you get gypped every time. But you got a chance when you walk into a liquor store to at least buy some real good liquor that will not kill you, won't cause you to have DT or hangover or go mad or any of that stuff. But down in Oklahoma, where I come from, if you want to have a little fun, if you want to go to a dance, if you want to have a little good time. It's an entirely different story. First, you got to walk 10 or 15 miles to get a bottle of whiskey. You got to pay 10 prices for what it's worth. It's homemade stuff. You know it's poison when you buy it. And I'll take a drink of it. I've seen a whole football team get this dog drunk on a and you have to drive 35 or 40 miles to give a guy 10 times what it's worth. So down there, instead of having gold nuggets, they got bootleg liquor. And the bootleggers are always in control, and they always will be in control as long as they can pass that prohibition law. And last year, they voted the bootleggers back in again by voting prohibition back in again. So that's roughly how the state of Oklahoma was operating. They used dope, they used opium, they used every kind of a trick to get these Indians to sign over their lands in bigger little chunks to some white lawyer from back east or some city slicker from some big town. So Oklahoma was full of those kind of people. And plus another army of people that worked in oil fields. I don't know whether you've ever seen a town turn into an oil field town overnight or not. But there's all kinds of guys hit town and just wake up one morning and they're there. You don't know where they come from. There's 15 or 20,000 of them out there in a little town. There used to be 500 or 600 farming people, sort of slow, poking around, you know, going to the mailbox and back, taking hours to tell you a story about something. But all at once there's 15 or 20,000 guys are running up and down the street out there. Nobody knows anybody else. Nobody ever seen anybody else. Nobody wants to see anybody else. Nobody hopes they'll ever see anybody else. Nobody will ever get a letter. They know that. They never got a letter in their lives. They never wrote a letter in their lives. No folks, no chance except one earthly thing. That's to get a job putting an oil well down. They run out there and they start. They got tool dressers. They got drillers. They got palm buckers, you got ditch diggers, you got pipe planners, you got preachers, you got pimps, you got whores, you got gamblers, sheriffs, deputies, all kinds of officers, lawyers, educated men, speakers, all kinds of entertainers up and down the streets. Everybody is one big army. Transient workers, they're going to work out there a few months or a few years at most, be gone. They don't even build houses, they don't build homes, they don't put down foundations. They put up a little boxcar house that costs $25 or $30 a piece. And move on as quick as the oil well's drilled, because when it's drilled, they put a little pump on it, they pump it over into the big tank farms, and they ship it back here to New York City in Newark, where they burn it up in the form of car smoke. But roughly talking, that's the way Oklahoma was when I come to start sort of reflecting about it. And I remember distinctly that my dad was one of the big wigs there, almost all the old settlers that lived there before the oil come in and before the boom really hit. The oil really was discovered. Almost every person was a land trader. I mean, they traded in leases, royalties, deeds, titles, all kinds of legal papers, all kinds of lots, all kinds of lands, farms, and sales and commissions and everything else like that. I remember he was a notary public, and that was his business. So he finally traded to where he got to where he was owner of 30 farms. Almost every kind of farm you can think of, he owned. Oat farm, wheat farm, cow farm, pig farm, horse farm, dog farm. Every kind of farm my dad owned, 30 of them. But later on, when times got hard and the big shot politicians turned against him, he ran for a big office in the state. One of the biggest offices in the state, lost all his money, lost his 30 farms that he put up for security to campaign the state to run for corporation commission. So he lost his 30 farms in 30 days. He said, I'm the only living human on earth that lost a farm a day for 30 days. So every time that you look up during those 30 days, there was somebody there foreclosing on something. Bankers foreclosing, all of that. I saw my dad lose in 30 days, I guess, the stuff that he built up and traded in years and years and years and years of not just talking, fast talking, but fist fighting and all such stuff as that. So it wasn't a peaceful, very sleepy life that I lived when I was a kid. I may have slept when Marjorie met me, but I slept very little. In my early days, I may be trying to sort of make up for it now, but I don't remember getting any real sleep back in them days. I don't think anybody did in that state. I don't know for sure that they ever will, but...
Now, speaking of your dad, Woody, didn't you often hear him sing many songs? I understood your mama and your papa both sang a great deal in the home. And that is one of the very earliest recollections that you have of having heard music.
Well, yeah, my dad would sing sort of an Indian Negro mixed up chants. I mean, he'd go to work generally chanting some Indian dialect, counting, saying good day, hello, it's a bad day, it's no good, or cussing, or something, in one of the Indian dialects, and he'd get home and stuff like that. He used to play with a little square dance band for a couple of years of his life, way back in the early times when a big fist fight broke out and he got his guitar all broke up. So he never went back into the business. But my mother was awful scared, nervous kind of a woman. So she would sing to sort of pacify, I guess, us kids. She had five children. And she would sing all about every big long ballad you could think of to put us to sleep at night, and sort of we'd get to worrying about where Papa was, because just about every night when people was chasing them down the town with guns and hunting each other and coming in sometime pretty well shot up. Why, in those days, a woman had a whole lot to worry about, just like pioneer women of all kinds and frontier women is. Lots of times when you don't know quite for sure whether your dad's ever going to come home anymore or not. And that was sort of the use, I think, that she made of these songs and when I first remember hearing them. And why, I guess I remember them like I do now, you might say, after all these years that I still remember almost word for word the songs that she used to sing.
This is the Sing Out Radio Magazine. If you want more information about Sing Out, it's easy. Just call 1-888-SING-OUT or log on to singout.org. You can also listen to the program as a podcast. This is episode 2221. And remember, you can also hear us on iTunes. This is the Sing Out Radio Magazine, and I'm your host, Tom Druckenmiller. Our theme music this week comes from Woody Guthrie, 100th Anniversary Collection, and we heard Cowboy Waltz. Woody was a pretty fair dance fiddler, as well as being a great songwriter. That's on Not Now Records from the UK. And before that, in 2001, the Woody Guthrie Archives received a couple of spools of wire recordings from a live Woody performance held in Newark, New Jersey in 1949. And Rounder Records has put them out. And we heard the one long track on there, which is How Much, How Long, an intro featuring Woody and his wife, Marjorie, discussing his background and his life. That's from the Woody Guthrie Foundation, released on Rounder Records in 2011. Well, we're going to lead off this last set, a nice long set, with Elizabeth Mitchell and the title track of the recording Little Seed, Songs for Children by Woody Guthrie. Here's Elizabeth Mitchell on the Sing Out Radio Magazine.
Take my little hoe, dig a hole in the ground. Take my little seed, and I plant it down. Tookie, 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 tie it low. We'll all dance around and see my little seed grow. The rain, it come, and it washed my ground. Was going to drown. I waited and splashed, and I carried my seed. I planted it again on some higher ground. Took it, took it, took it, took it tight alone. Took it, took it, took it, took it tight alone. Took, took, took it, took it, took it tight. See my little seed grow. The sun got hot and the ground got dry. I thought my little seed would burn and die. I carried some water from a watering mill, and I said, little seed, you can drink.
Crops are all in, the peaches are rotting, the oranges are piled in their creosote dump. They're flying you back to the Mexico border to pay all your money to wade back again. My father's own father, he waded that river. They took all the money he made in his life. My brothers and sisters come working the fruit trees, and they rolled the trucks till they took down and died. Goodbye to my one, goodbye Rosalita. Adios, mi amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you will be deportees. Some of us are illegal and others not wanted. Our work contract's out and we have to move on. 600 miles to the Mexico border. They chase us like outlaws, like rustlers and thieves. We died in your hills and we died on your deserts. We died in your valleys, we died on your plains. We died in your trees and we died in your bushes. Both sides of the river, we've died just the same. Goodbye to my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mi amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you will be deportees. A skyplane caught fire over Los Gatos Canyon. Like a fireball of lightning, it shook all our hills. And who are these friends, oh, scattered like dry leaves? The radio says they are just deportees. Is this the best way we can grow our big orchards? Is this the best way we can grow our good fruit? To fold like dry leaves and rot on your topsoil and be known by no name except deportees. Goodbye to my one, goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mi amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you.
Make it hard, and boys, wherever I may roam. Jack Davy come round through the woods singing so loud and gaily. His voice kept ringing through the green, green trees, and he charmed the heart of a lady, charmed the heart of a lady. How old are you, my pretty little miss? How old are you, my honey? She answered him with a silly little grin, I'll be 16 next Sunday, be 16 next Sunday. Pretty little miss, come go with me, my honey. Come go with me, my pretty little miss, and you never will want for money. You never will want for money. Will you forsake your husband, dear? Will you forsake your baby? Will you forsake your fine, fine home and go with the blackjack Davy? The Blackjack Davy. Yes, I'll forsake my husband, dear, I'll forsake my baby. I'll forsake my fine, fine home and go with the Blackjack Davy, go with the Blackjack Davy. She pulled on her high-heeled boots made of Spanish leather, jumped up in old Davy's lap, and they both rode away together, they both rode away. Slept in a fine feather bed beside her husband and baby. Tonight she'll sleep on the cold ground beside of the Blackjack Davy, side of the Blackjack Davy, side of the Blackjack Davy, side of the Blackjack Davy.
No longer alive. You took Jim Reed to your warm wedding bed, and out of your love was born the boy Ed. A pal killed Jim Reed by the light of the moon. Your son Ed was blown down in a drunken saloon. Bell star, tell me where have you gone since old Oklahoma's sand hills you did roam? Is it heaven's wide street you're tying your reins, or single footing somewhere below? The next was Bob Younger, you loved him so well. He rode with the James boys on the long trail. They caught him in Minnesota along with his gang. He died down at home in the cell or the chain. You loved Mr. William Clark Quantrill and Civil War guerrillas in the Missouri hills. They hit Lawrence, Kansas and fought there still. When they rode out, 300 lay killed. Bell star, tell me where have you gone since old Oklahoma's sand hills you did roam? Is it heaven's wide street you're tying your reins, or single footing somewhere below? Some say that you could have, some whisper you might have loved Frank James on a couple of nights. He fought the Midland Railroad almost to death. In 1916, Frank drew his last breath. Some say that you could have, some said maybe so. You loved Jesse James, that desperado. Well, Jesse had a family, a wife and a son. He died down at home by the four brothers' guns. Bell star, tell me where have you gone since old Oklahoma's sand hills you did roam? Is it heaven's wide street you're tying your reins, or single footing somewhere below? Bell star, your time's getting late. Did you hear about Jim Younger? Did you hear his sad fate? They say he was pardoned for all he had done. He blowed out his own brains in 1901. Hey, lovers, they say, comb your waving dark hair. Eight men knew the feel of your dark velvet waist. Eight men knew the sound of your tan leather skirt. Eight men knew the bark of the guns that you wore. Bell star, tell me where have you gone since old Oklahoma's sand hills you did roam? Is it heaven's wide street you're tying your reins, or single footing somewhere below?
I think the year was 1951, maybe. The Weavers had a job in Hollywood. But on our day off, I went out to Topanga Canyon, and there was a little house party at the home of a man named Bob Witt. And by gosh, there was Woody Guthrie. He'd come out there with one more girlfriend. And the party was not very big, 15 people maybe. And we went around the circle. There was a tall black woman in the corner, and she astounded us all with the power of her voice. We'd never heard her before, but she said her name was Odetta. And finally, it came Woody's turn, and he made up new verses to a famous old Irish tune called Acres of Clams. And he had a verse about the FBI visiting his house. And he said, I, being so foolish, I let them in. Then his next verse, they said, he asked, would I fight for my country? I answered the FBI, yay. I said, I will point a gun for my country, but I won't guarantee you which way. So even though he was not at the peak of his powers, he was able to improvise that extraordinary little verse.
Hope you've enjoyed our program this week on the Sing Out Radio Magazine as we have been listening to stories and songs about Woody Guthrie. That was Pete once again with The Last Time I Heard Woody Sing from Pete Remembers Woody on Appleseed Records from Pete Seeger. And before that, we heard from Sarah Gray and a Woody tune I had never heard before called Bell Star from her recording Down in Old Dolores, Sarah Gray with Kieran Means, and that's on Fellside Records. And before that, a tune that Woody didn't write, but he played an awful lot, a tune called Black Jack Davy. And we heard Joe Rollin Porter from his recording Take This Hammer, and that's on Jaropo Records. And before that, Joel Raphael, who's recorded many, many, many Woody Guthrie tunes. We heard I Ain't Got No Home from his recording The Songs of Woody Guthrie, Volume 1 and Volume 2 on Inside Recordings. And before that, we heard Arlo with Deportees from his self-titled recording from 1974, originally on Warner Brothers, but now it's been reissued on Rising Sun Records. And we let off that set with Elizabeth Mitchell from her recording Little Seed, Songs for Children by Woody Guthrie. And we heard the title track, and that's on Smithsonian Folkways Records. You've been listening to the Sing Out Radio Magazine. I've been your host, Tom Druckenmiller. If you've enjoyed the program, you can find out more about Sing Out by calling 1-888-SING-OUT or by checking us out on the web at singout.org. The Sing Out Radio Magazine is produced at the Little Cat Records Studios with production assistance from Betty Druckenmiller. Be careful out there. Be sure to get inoculated. Wear a mask, wash your hands, and keep your distance so you can join me next time for another trip into the fascinating world of folk and roots music on the Sing Out Radio Magazine. This is episode 2221.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning. I'd hammer in the evening all over this land. I'd hammer out danger. I'd hammer out a morning. I'd hammer out love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land. If I had a bell, I'd ring it in the morning. I'd ring it in the evening all over this land. I'd ring out danger. I'd ring out a warning. I'd ring out love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land. If I had a song, if I had a song, I'd sing it in the morning. I'd sing it in the evening all over this land. I'd sing out danger.